All right, everybody. Welcome back. We are now doing the legacy call, which means that you've been an OBS member for at least a year of consecutive membership, and you are going to get coached today. So you just got to raise your hand. Let's go with Beth. You're first. All right, Beth, let's get your camera on. There you go. All right, what are we coaching on?
I'm sort of stuck in my in a thought pattern that's not getting me where I'd like to be. I have been in the membership 4.5 years. I've pretty much maintained at the high end of my range. I'd rather be at the lower end, but at the higher end of my range for 2.5 years. I've through some health issues and other things, I've been able to do that. And about a month ago, my father died. He was almost 93 and had dementia, and there's th sadness with it, but some relief too. And I have a lot of work that comes along with that. And it's been a very intense m month since he died, with complicated family issues and communications, and my sleep was badly disrupted for a couple of weeks or more. That's straightening out.
What's the thought pattern though that you're stuck in?
So I'm going back. I'm finding that I'm having some trouble with old habits coming up of overeating, mostly in the late afternoon, and feeling like I have to have something sweet after dinner. And so every day I go and I'm like, I'm going to plan. Today's going to be different. I've been journaling. And I need, so it's not, I'm not
But what's
getting
the
back.
thought pattern that you're stuck in? So far, you haven't given me a thought. You've given me all your facts of what's happened, but I've not heard a recurring thought pattern.
Well, I guess it's not thought pattern, but habits, getting back into to habits. The thought pattern maybe is the sort of the checking out, like I just have to eat this because I need this to cope.
What are we coping with? So let's tackle one. Which one do you want to do? Do you want to do the sweet after dinner? Like, which one is coping, the sweet after dinner or the late afternoon?
The eating in the afternoon is a bigger problem.
Okay. So, and you said, I just need to eat this to cope. What are we coping with?
I think it's some of it is having not having a lot of downtime.
So in the
And
afternoons, you don't have downtime?
during the day, I retired 6 months ago, but the amount of work that I have around my father's estate and his things, and just things that I got behind on because the last month was so crazy.
Like, what are we behind on?
Keeping myself organized. I had just started to in retirement, I had really wanted to get into doing some writing. And the weekend before he died, I went to a writer's workshop and came out of that just full of all the things that I wanted to do. I'm trying to get back into my morning routine, my all the things that help me sleep. And I know when I eat better, I sleep better, and
Right,
that.
I understand all that, but you're not telling me what you're coping with. You're telling me lots of actions, like I want to get this going again. I want to get this going again and stuff, but I haven't figured out where are we coping? Why do we need to eat in the afternoons? It's because you think you should be doing all this stuff already, or what's happening?
Well, I never get done enough.
How do you know when? All right, so tell me this. If by the end of the week you would have done enough, what would that look like? Tell me all the things that would be finished by the end of this week. Be like, you know what? I actually did enough this week. This is great.
That would never happen.
Oh. So at least we can tell ourselves the truth that you're just lying to yourself that you never do enough. You obviously are doing enough. If this is the thing about that's funny about enough. if there's no end to enough, you shouldn't tell yourself that there's a magical point that you would feel better. You just told me there's no magical point coming.
No, I mean, eventually there will be. Eventually.
Well, tell me what that is.
Well, eventually I'll have been able to do what I need to do for the estate.
Okay. So like how far off do you think that is?
Well, it's going to be at least, I haven't been appointed as executor yet. It's in probate. So there's a lot of stuff I can't start on, but.
So we can set all that aside. Or are we allowing ourselves to think that we're not doing enough and that that's on the list and all this other stuff?
I've always used my to-do list to beat myself up.
Okay. So the problem isn't that you have a lot to do. The problem is you just have a recurring pattern of when you have things on your list, you use it to beat yourself up.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, could we maybe just stop doing that rather than like orchestrating overeats in the afternoon and doing like keeping ourselves like, oh my gosh, I got all these things and blah, blah, blah. What if we just told the truth about our list? Number one, here's the list of stuff that can't even be done right now. So when I want to fixate, I have to tell myself, hey, look, you're fixating on something that's not a problem.
Yeah. I'm more aware of it than I used to be, but it's definitely kicked back up and I feel like I know better, but I just keep.
But you do know better. Like this is the, it's so funny. It's like, now we're going to use that against ourselves. You do know better. Just because you know better doesn't mean that it's easy to execute in the moment, especially when you're coming off a death. Like I know not to yell at my husband, but sometimes shit happens and I'm pissed and it's been a bad day. And guess what I do?
You yell at him.
Yeah. But I don't spend a month going like, I know better. I'm just like, yeah, sometimes shit happens. Old habits come back.
Yeah.
Different tipping points in my emotional abilities all come to a head. But just like, literally, I want you to think about this. Just because you know not to use it against you doesn't mean that your brain won't use it against you sometimes. The best way to approach it is to know when it's happening and saying like, okay, let's calm down. What do we actually need to do this week? Like my writing retreat stuff. That's like if I was enthusiastic at one point and I had like all the things I wanted to do for that, I can plug that in when I'm ready. That's all taken care of. I'm just not doing that right now. It's just like I'm going to a writing retreat in December, right before we are opening for the new year, teaching a workshop, starting a bunch of other stuff. This was the only time this writing retreat could happen. I will not be coming back and writing a book. And let me tell you, I bet you when I go, I'm going to be very enthusiastic.
Yeah. It's just that's something that I have always, there've always been other things that have come up. And I guess I thought I'd finally gotten to the point and I will get back to it. And
yeah,
but it's just,
could you have predicted that your dad was going to die a week after your writing retreat?
Well, it wouldn't have been a surprise, but no, I mean, he wasn't in the hot. I mean, he was the morning after I got back when his wife told me he had a cold, then I could have predicted it.
I want you to think about it. Like I like how we use this against ourselves. Like I always think I'm going to do it and something always comes up. And it's like, okay, but that doesn't mean in the future you won't make time for it. Like we say those things as if they're really relevant and important, except we feel like crap when we tell ourselves that story.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I went to the writing retreat, I have all the information. Now is not the time. I will make the time for it one day. And I'm going to keep that on my list, but I'm not going to have it on the list of the, this is Beth's list of things she sucks at getting done. Beth's list of things that she should be doing better, faster, more efficiently yesterday. Like, your list has an ugly title. Instead of like Beth things to do, now Beth needs to prioritize and just bang them out in what makes sense, what fits this time frame, mm-hmm. what has to wait. You know, like the things that before you, until you're, I guess, the executor or whatever you're waiting for there, until that happens, all of these things are now what we call in the holding tank list. This is the to-do list of hold.
Yeah.
Instead of the to-do list of I should be doing it. Like we put all this extra pressure on ourselves by saying things like I should be doing all this when it's like you can't even legally do it yet. It's like right. You definitely shouldn't be even thinking about it right now.
But I still find myself like checks will come in that I can't deposit because I can't create the estate.
Right. But you're telling yourself, here's all the things I can't do instead of like, oh, here's a check that I will deposit when I become the executor.
Yeah.
Do you notice how like I just think about it very differently? Like we're talking about the same fucking check. You're like, but I can't because this haven't happened and this hasn't happened yet. And, you know, gosh.
Yeah, I know I can't, but I still feel like it shouldn't take 8 weeks to be named executor. And there, and I feel stuff building up.
But that's your pressure you're putting on yourself. Right. That's not life putting pressure on you. Like when you say it shouldn't take 8 weeks, but the state says, oh, it takes 8 weeks.
Yeah.
That's like saying my two-year-old shouldn't be shitting his pants when he's shitting his pants.
Yeah.
You're just mad now. Instead of like my two-year-old will learn one day. I doubt he'll be 20 and shit his pants. Today's not the day. I'm just going to keep working on it. Just like with these checks. When they come in, instead of being angry that it takes 8 weeks for all this to get set up, just say like, look, I don't want to eat my face off this afternoon. You know what I'm going to do? Say, this goes in the pile of things I handle once I'm the executor. When that happens, I handle this stuff. Because if you do that, then you're not sitting there going, I need to cope every afternoon.
Yeah.
Because you're coping with you right now. You're not even coping with the situation.
But it's interesting because I will, because when people tell me, I'll be talking to a bank person or some other person and they'll keep saying, well, you have to, you know, you need to set up an account. And I'll say, I know that. And I can't do that because I don't have this. And I find that every time somebody says that to me, I still feel defensive, like I don't know what I'm doing, or they think I don't know what I'm doing.
They're informing you because every single person who comes in, there's for every person that comes in, there's probably half that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I just want you to see how like quickly you are turning everything around on you.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, I go to the bank and when they tell me these things, they think I don't know what I'm doing. Might think you don't know what you're doing, but that's because they probably have hundreds of people that come in there weekly who don't know what they're doing. So they just treat everybody the same, which is a lot more efficient for a bank. They're not exactly saying Beth's an idiot.
No, but I notice how quickly that's how I hear it.
Yeah. So the challenge for you. So this is what I always tell people. The moment you notice that's how you hear it, you've won the game. It's no longer a problem. When you know that you're spinning a terrible tale, then you owe it to yourself to say, okay, that's some fake ass bullshit I'm making up. That's just what my brain's saying right now. It's not true. They're not telling me something's wrong with me. They're telling me, just in case I don't know, They want to make sure I do know. That's just time to pivot your thinking. The problem that we have is we have two problems. One is the person who doesn't know their thinking is fake ass shit. Until I point it out, they're like, what? Like on my last call, somebody, I had pointed out to her that she had, I can't remember what she was getting coached on. She'd lost 167 pounds and she was getting coached and she didn't realize she was judging herself. She thought that what she was telling me about her was just true. I'm just communicating facts. And I was like, no, that's your judgment. That she had ADHD.
Yeah, I heard that call. I could relate. Right.
So her first problem was I didn't know I was judging myself. Because if you don't know, then you just feel bad about what you think. That's it. And if you don't know it's judgment, you can't solve it. That's when you're trying to become organized when you're ADHD, thinking, oh, the problem is I'm unorganized. When the problem really is, I tell myself I'm wrong no matter what I do. That was her problem. Yeah. And when she realized she wasn't wrong, that was just how our brain works, like, oh my God, this changes everything. So now, every time she judges herself, I'm like, now we don't have a problem anymore because now we just know it's judgment. And so when that happens, we pivot. We tell ourselves the new truth, which is, I'm just being hard on myself. I'm actually not an idiot. They tell this to every customer that walks into the bank.
Yeah, I think that's where I get hung up. Like, I'm much more aware of these things than I used to be, but I need different thoughts to replace them, the thoughts that feel true.
So let me ask you this. Does it feel true to you that when you are judging yourself, that's just what you do? Like, that's just part of how my brain works. It tends to judge me.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, from childhood, not enough. No, you know, you should have known better, and you should have done it, you know, you should have known to do it a different way, or you should have known that's a thought pattern
you already have your thought switch, and you just said it yourself. You don't need any more than that.
What was it?
This all started in childhood.
Yeah.
I was supposed to know how to do things before I knew how to do them. And so now sometimes I think I should know things that I don't know yet. Sometimes I think I'm not doing good enough because that all started in childhood. That's it. What else do you want?
It doesn't feel like, I guess I need to find what I can say to my, just recognizing it doesn't seem to make it, I recognize it, but it doesn't shift how I feel about it.
Are you sure? Have you tried it?
I thought I was.
Because I want you to think about this. When I say, Beth, you probably should have known all that stuff. I mean, why did you even bother going to the bank? I mean, come on. You could be handling this a lot better and faster. Does that kind of sound like what you're telling yourself right now?
No, that was just an example of where they've repeatedly told me I had to do something which they know I can't do yet. I think it's more the, you know, and maybe I just have to think about it more, that I'll work on things and feel like I'm not making any progress. If I step back, I can look at it and say, well, I got these five things done. And I guess there's still a voice saying, you're never going to get through this if you don't get more done.
Okay. So let's have that voice. Let's use that one. You're never going to get through this unless you get more done. Okay. So that voice comes in. That's probably the one that's harming you the most because you got teary about it. Is it true that you're never going to get through this if you didn't get more done that day?
Well, no. And I got the holidays coming. We have a house project coming, and I'm feeling anxious about getting things to a point where, because we need the space in the basement, because we have to clear out the second floor. And
but let me ask you this. I want you to think about this with your rational brain, not your childhood brain, and not the part that's a grieving daughter and all this other stuff. Let's take the space in the basement and the holidays coming, because what we tend to do is we think of things as like big things. Yeah. And we don't like narrow it down. What would happen if you don't clear out the space in the basement? Like you can't get to it because other things come up.
It means that while the project is going on and we're living here, which will probably be a couple of months, it's going to be a lot harder to live and navigate around things.
So you could live and navigate whether or not you do the basement or not.
I guess we'd figure something out.
Oh. So let me ask you this. Which feels different? You're not going to get enough done, and the holidays are coming, and you've got that basement. Or, well, I want to get the basement done, but if we don't, I guess we'll figure something out. Which one feels better? Because they're both true from your own mouth.
The latter one feels better, but not. I guess I'll feel I really failed if we do. I'll feel like everyone, the two other people that live here, are gonna, and myself will have a more difficult time if I don't do everything I can to make it go smoothly and have.
Yeah, it will be definitely harder. Like, that's the truth. Like, I don't want you, like, I don't know what you're looking for. What do you think the solution to this is?
To what I have to get done?
To all of this. Like, I think you're looking to feel a certain way.
Yeah, I'd like to feel less anxious about.
Okay. If you want to feel less anxious, then you have to start telling the truth. The truth is you need to clean out the basement, and it's going to be a priority because you don't want the next few months to be harder than they need to be. But if for some reason something else is more important, takes precedence, the worst thing that will happen is that you and two other people will be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
When I say that, what goes through your mind? Because that's also the truth. Just coming from your side of the story.
That I have a hard time with other people's discomfort.
Yeah. So how does it feel when you think the worst that's going to happen is I don't get to the basement, other people will be uncomfortable, and I might talk to myself like an asshole. Like, that's literally our worst case scenario we've got working right now.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
That feels more manageable.
Okay. Less anxious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I want you to think about this. We do not, like, sometimes what happens is to feel less anxious, we think we have to do a lot of things. Like, I got to knock all these things off my list. And I think the big thing is you're telling a very anxious story.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be uncomfortable, put out. I don't know if I can get to it. And you know the holidays are coming. for fuck's sake. And that stupid bank keeps telling me shit that like, they think I'm supposed to know all this. I do know this. I guess they think I'm an idiot. Like, I mean, your story is riddled with anxiety.
Yeah.
And all I'm asking you to do is don't paint it to be rainbows and daisies. Just tell it less anxiously as this. That bank probably tells every single person the same shit every single time. Yeah. There's nothing I can do about these checks until the 8 weeks are over. I wish it would happen sooner, but the state is on their own fucking timeline. Like, I can't control that. So if I can't control that, I might as well put that aside because I got a basement that needs my attention. And the worst thing that can happen is if some of this stuff, because I want you to think about this, is there anything in your life right now that if you didn't get it done, that's on your list, like real damage is going to happen other than you being a butt to yourself?
No, I mean, there's going to come a point where I have to get the second floor cleaned out, cleared out.
And let me ask you this. What are the odds, if I was going to bet money, would it be safe to say, let's say I was going to bet $10,000 on Beth. What are the odds of Beth ever in her life not getting things done that actually are critical?
Yeah.
But you're just like, yeah, whatever. This is the week I'm getting lazy. Finally happened.
No, and in the 3 weeks after my father died, I got an unbelievable amount of stuff done. I had to move him out of his wife's house and plan the service and coordinate. And I wasn't sleeping, but I did get a hell of a lot of stuff done.
So how does it feel when I say this? Beth is the kind of person that can get a hell of a lot of shit done. She just doesn't give herself enough credit. She tends to beat herself up over the few things that she doesn't get done.
Yeah, that's the tendency. That's the thought pattern.
Okay, but I want you to think about this. How does it feel when I say that, though? Beth gets a hell of a lot of stuff done. Can really get a lot of stuff done. She just sometimes beats herself up thinking she should do more. Sometimes she even creates some like faux emergencies. Like the holidays are now an emergency.
Yeah, that's definitely sounds true.
Okay. So that's what, when you were asking about how can I feel less anxious and stuff, sometimes for all of you, so it's really just telling a different little bit of a story. It doesn't mean that we're telling a story where like, I feel so much peace. I feel so much relaxation and all this other stuff. Because now what I want, because I know your brain's a lot like mine. It never thinks it gets enough done.
Yeah.
There's not a fucking day that goes by in Corinne's life where she thinks she got enough done. Every day I'm Marco Polo Jane. She catches me this all the time. And I will say, I barely got anything done yesterday. And then I'll run through a list of all the things I got done. And my barely is in comparison to what I think I'm capable of, what needs to be done. Like, it's this fake ass set of standards.
Yeah.
And I just feel bad when I do it. But if that's the worst that happens, I'm like, okay. The worst that happens is Corinne holds herself to high standards. She still gets a lot done. Sometimes I just have to tell myself, hey, this is one of those times where you are being hard on yourself. Because it is true that you're the kind of person who actually does get a lot done. And you also are the kind of person who puts a lot on their plate.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be somebody who puts a lot on their plate, you will always feel like you're never getting enough done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay. I just want you to tell yourself that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you are being hard on yourself, because that will get you out of anxiety and into some calm.
Yeah.
Truth usually feels calming. It doesn't mean we're happy.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we're like laid out on the couch now, enjoying our life. It just means we don't have a 5-alarm fire going on when literally the toast is burning in the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And also know, like, no matter what, you've lost your dad. Like, when you are at any death, whether you loved him or not, death always brings up lots of things. Not only the work, but, you know, it just triggers a lot of stuff. So don't be surprised by a lot of this either.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, I'll do my journaling and just be kinder to myself.
Well, I think that's why you're like when you said in the very beginning, I'm coping in the afternoon with food. I don't even think you're coping with all the things you have to do. You're coping from the pressure you're putting on yourself around the things you need to do.
Yeah.
And that's where we're trying to create the space for you. It's like, there is a long list. There are lots of things. I tend to put a lot on my plate. But how I'm speaking to myself about all of it is what will make it to where I either am able to get things done or I'm going to need to cope. Because I'm coping with the internal conversation I'm having. I'm not coping with the lists. Okay.
Yep.
All right, Beth. You hang in there. And I'm sorry about your dad.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Hey.
Hi. Hello.
How are you?
I'm kind of pre-crying just in case I got called on. I wasn't sure it was going to happen, but it did.
Pre-crying.
So, yeah, you know. I just wanted to get it ready.
Before you go out, you know. Like, everybody get your drinks in before I have to pay for them.
God. Oh, man. So I've been with NoBS since a year ago, September. Until actually mid-July this year. Doing great, lost about 50 pounds, feeling good about everything. In July, I got laid off. That's actually not the problem. I have started my own company. I'm consulting now full time. Okay, love good. It. So happy. So
that's what my awesome. Best friend's husband did. He just started his own gig and was like, I'm just not working for anybody anymore. He got laid off a couple times and he was just like, I'm done.
No more fucking bosses ever. Like my
exactly.
And kind of related, my stress level went down quite a bit. And so it gave me a lot of space to do thought work. So I've steadily been gaining weight since mid July, but I feel like my thought work is
how much weight have we gained?
25-ish.
20 pounds since July. Yeah. August, September, October, November. So about 5 pounds a month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you're journaling and stuff, but are you okay with the 20 pounds or
no.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Why are we gaining weight then? Especially for our own boss.
Yeah.
Started our own company.
Yes.
So why are we gaining weight?
I'm working less than I ever have. So, you know, I was working probably 50 or 60 hours a week. I worked in tech and now I'm working 30. And yeah. So the thought work that I'm doing is bringing up, I'm a binger. And so I've been doing a lot of emotional eating as I'm working through the inner child work. And, you know, I keep data. I look back at it. I see that I'm, you know, overeating at 40.
But why has it come back? Why did it come back in July?
I think
you said I'm doing a lot. I'm doing emotional eating. What emotions are we eating around?
I think I've had a lot of space to think about inner child work.
Yeah.
And how much I was people pleasing when I was working full time, my tendencies and my level of anxiety when I was working was so high. If I made a mistake, I'm like, oh shit, everything's going to go to
don't
hell.
Don't worry about that. That part's okay. Done. Because now we're working on, like, this is what I want to show you. You keep going back to when you were working, but we haven't worked since July. We have been working for ourselves. And you said, I only have to work 30 hours a week. This is great. I'm not dealing with bullshit, but I'm overeating. Why? Because it's not about the work.
Right.
It's not about that old job because you ain't had that job. So what is the emotions that are coming up now? Like, if you had to name two emotions you're eating over all the time, like if you could boil it down to two, what would be the two you would list?
I would say anxiety and I don't know if this is emotion, but you know, I feel like at the beginning of the call, I was so cool. I'm like, yeah, now I'm working full time and it's amazing, or by myself and it's amazing. But now it's just all me. I'm the breadwinner of my family. What if it goes to shit?
Okay. Anxiety.
Anxiety and fear. Yes.
This is why I wanted to know, because this is very interesting. This is usually what this is. I'm just going to first tell you, welcome to entrepreneurialhood. It is with anxiety and fear.
Yeah.
I've been at it for 16 years. I'll let you know the first day I don't have anxiety and fear.
Yeah.
it's real. So this is what happens when you're doing it yourself. Probably the biggest problem thought you're having is, I am the breadwinner, and that means it's all on me.
Mm-hmm.
And when we think, and it is really hard for me to even coach you on this, because this literally every month I get coached on this, because it's my swan song. About the time I start feeling a little better, next thing you know, I am panicking. I am overworking. There's all these things that start happening because I feel like everything's on me.
Yes.
And it feels so true.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hardest part of this thought, because we can argue with money and finances. Like, you can compare what I make to, you know, what my husband makes. My whole fucking family works for me now. Like, every time one of my family members gets on the payroll, I get more and more sick to my stomach.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the reason why I tell you this is because I'm going to tell you, it's all on me is the thought you have to divorce. That's going to be the biggest problem you're having, because if every day you are working from behind the eight ball like that, you are going to want to eat. And like, I don't cope with eating anymore, but I went through about 2 or 3 years of drinking.
Yeah.
I was never like an alcoholic, but I'd gotten to where we were going to the bar and drinking almost every night. I'd have to have 2 to 3 glasses of wine just to be able to fucking go to bed.
Yes. Yeah.
So what we want to do is we want to kind of like play around. I'm sorry, I keep scratching my face. I had a laser treatment done, and y'all do not know, but oh my God, my face is so dry, sandpaper and itchy. It's like, I look like I have cooties or something. Cause I'm just
have at it. Just go. Go for it.
I just want to like put my face literally on sandpaper and just go like,
no, I wouldn't judge.
Oh my God. So let's pull apart, it's all on me. How is financially, is there any wiggle room there? Is it literally all on you?
No. My husband works at a gym. He doesn't make a ton of money, but he has health insurance that we're on now, which was really important to me. I didn't want to lose that. I've saved my ass off just in case anything like this ever happened, because I always thought getting laid off would be the most catastrophic thing that would happen to me. So no, like, even if all my clients tomorrow were like, you suck, we hate you, we got to go, I'd be okay for 6 months to a year or two. Yeah.
Okay. So this is important. So for all of you that are kind of in this boat, if you're the breadwinner, if you kind of relate to this topic, the first thing we do is we have to create some safety, because the thought it's all on me usually is masking. I could lose everything. People around me are going to hurt. Like, it's a heavily loaded diaper. You know, it just got a lot that goes along with it. So it's not just about it being all on you. It's more of just, it's all on me. And that means I'm afraid we'll lose this, we'll lose that. Like our livelihood goes away. And whenever we're talking like legit safety issues, we have to create safety first before our brain can calm down. Otherwise, it's going to try to create safety in other ways.
Yeah.
Overworking, drinking, and food are like the big three that our brain will latch on to. So you telling yourself, like, my husband, he does have a job. And I like even saying, even though it doesn't pay as well as mine, we like the odds of us both losing our jobs at the exact same moment.
Yeah.
Like me losing all my clients and him losing that is like so 0 to 9.
Yeah.
Just to create a sense of safety. Then reminding yourself, I have runway. And then I always remind myself, like when I think I'm losing everything, it's like the likelihood of every member of NoBS quitting on the same day is ridiculous. I would see it coming. So one of the things that I do for myself is like with your business, since you're a newer entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this. If things started going south in your business, would you see it coming? Or would it just be like blindsided, thought it was all perfect?
So I work in operations. There's a system called Salesforce that I've been using for 20 years. So I'm consulting with that with 3 clients who I've worked with in the past. Two have already re-signed contracts with me. I have pretty steady. I'm thinking of other income streams potentially. And so no, like if one phase is out, I'll be able to find another one and I have enough room. And okay. So no, I don't
That's
think
another thing to give yourself some safety around, which is, my business would never suddenly disappear.
No.
I would know if things were going south. And let me ask you this. If things started going south, what would your backup plan be? Like, what would you do?
I feel like I've formed enough great relationships in my industry that I could reach out to people and they would absolutely help me. I've spent a lot of time building relationships with folks that I've worked with and have been always been a nice person at work. So I think I'd be okay.
So the first thing really is just to find all the evidence that things aren't all on you.
Yeah.
Because the equal truth is while I make money and I've done a really good job of starting a business, sometimes it feels like it's all on me, but the real truth is I've set things up to where if things go south, I can handle it.
Yes.
I will know what to do. Like for me, it always goes back to if all else fails, if everything shut down, I always say I'm a fucking amazing server. And if I had to work 3 serving jobs to be able to, you know, live in a small apartment or whatever, I know how to get scrappy. We would never be on the street. Now, I also tell myself that is the absolute worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we have to go there. We have to go to worst case scenarios. We have to think about like, if things really started falling apart, what would I do? The next thing is just knowing when you're getting in an anxious state and then calming yourself down. So that comes from identifying how does fear and anxiety feel in my body?
Yeah.
And I'm going to promise you that it's probably going to be a lot more subtle and camouflaged than you think because you're overeating. And wouldn't you say you were overeating? I'm sorry. I don't know if I wrote it down.
Oh, geez. I think my stopping it enough was 40% last month.
Okay. And what meals?
Dinner has been a struggle for me. Okay. Breakfast and lunch, I'm fine. Dinner and weekends.
All right. So why do you think dinner is where it's having a problem versus during the day?
I'm very busy during the day. I'm very focused on work. Dinner, it's my husband's home.
Yeah, because all day long you're creating safety. When you're working, guess what you're doing?
Ma'am.
Creating safety.
Yes. Yeah.
When you're done with work, guess what you're doing?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I have all this downtime. I have time I've never had before. Like, because I was working, you know, 6 to 6 or 7 to 7 at my other jobs. And now I am have downtime with my noggin. And I'm like, oh shit, what am I going to fill this with? And
okay, So why do we need to fill your downtime with your dog?
Oh, I said my noggin because I'm a ding dong. So no, my brain. So I like have a lot of thoughts going. Yes.
But why do we need to fill our time? Why, like, is it just simply because you haven't learned how to have downtime yet?
Totally. Yeah.
Okay. That is another story I want you to tell yourself about the evenings is I need to learn how to have downtime.
I do.
I don't have the same kind of job I used to. And I don't need to. At 30 hours a week, that's providing us the lifestyle we need.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because sometimes what happens is when we have worked really hard and a lot, then we kind of, it's almost, I'm just going to tell you my perspective. It took me a long time to be able to have downtime and not feel unsafe.
That's like where I am.
The business is going to slip. If I'm not working, something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right,
I mean,
is that where you're at?
Yeah. I mean, I should be building a course. I should be doing this. I'm not letting myself, I think, have the time because I feel like I should be doing more for my business or prepping something or
should you be doing more? Let's just make sure you shouldn't be doing more. Number one.
Yes.
Because sometimes we do need to be doing more and like, we just need to do that. And then sometimes it's just a false flag. It's like, no, we don't need to be doing more.
I think it's and I could, but I don't have to right now.
Okay. Then at night, that's what we have to tell yourself rather than you should be building a course. You could just say like, look, I don't have to build a course right now. I've got plenty of business.
Yeah.
My business is not demanding a course right now.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Now, you could also tell yourself, I could be building a course. If I want to work more than 30 hours a week, I could be building a course. But mm-hmm. It's like, this is what's important is, and this is for all of you, whether you have your own business or not. Like we do this, like doctors do this all. And we always think there's all, our last person with the probate and all this other stuff. Yeah. She's like, I should be doing more. So just wait, you don't want to throw that out when you have those thoughts. But what you want to do is you want to examine them through the lens of, before I toss this thought, I need to check and say, is this based in reality or not? Like when my brain says, Corinne, you really should, for example, the last couple of days, I've been working on y'all's workshop and I was scatterbrained. Like the course creation for me is, I'm so good at it, but oh my God, it's a slog.
Yeah.
You know, because I like to work on lots of different things. And when I'm course creating, you got to be focused. And because I'm not a focused person when I'm doing it, it is a constant coming back to what's important. It is like, I get lost doing this. I get to watching TV. The next thing you know, I'm fucking around in the kitchen. Like I just catch myself. I'm like, here I am in the wild again. How did I get away from my laptop? You know, and it's like, I was like, all right, go back to work. And that's exhausting. Even though I create great content. So I always have to remind myself, like I would catch myself doing some bullshit and I'd be like, you really should be working on your workshop. And I would say like, you know what? You're right. I wasn't supposed to be on Instagram right now. Right now is not Wordle time.
Yeah.
Like we're not supposed to be checking Slack and seeing what our team is up to.
Yes. Yeah.
And so sometimes it's warranted. That's why we don't want to just toss it. Then sometimes it's like, it's a no. Just like on Monday after camp, my brain was like, I really should work on this. I should catch up on all these things. And I was like, there is no fire burning. You just taught for 3 days on stage. You just are, this is false flag work.
Yeah.
Because you have a hard time settling down. Because I was thinking, oh my God, you didn't work. This was my thought about camp. You didn't work for 3 days and you got behind.
Mm-hmm. That seems rational.
Exactly. There's nothing rational that ever happens in our minds. Like, our brains are the most irrational thing. But my story was, well, you know, you didn't really work for 3 days.
Right.
I mean, I wasn't checking shit off my Asana tasks.
That Asana will stare back at you too.
Yeah, it will. Like an asshole. I mean, it just sat there and just like started going in the red where all my deadlines were missed.
Oh.
But this is one of those things you want to like, you want to be able to listen. Our brains are always telling us very good information.
Yep.
Sometimes our brain is saying, I'm terrified that you can't make enough money. And you're like, look, we don't need to build a course right now. I just need to reassure you. Everything's going fine. We have clients. I know what to do if we lose one. We have insurance, but I've got 6 months of runway if the worst thing in the world happened and they all quit tomorrow. Sometimes it's just our brain saying things and it's saying, I just need you to reassure me until I know how to reassure myself. Until this is no longer new to me, being a consultant is no longer new, and I don't have to worry about it so much. And then sometimes it's our brain saying like, bitch, I thought you were going to be writing content. Why are you like snooping around in Slack? Like our brains are like, hey, I'm actually trying to help you get on track. So we don't want to throw out our thoughts. We want to like just check with them and say like, what are you really trying to tell me here?
Yeah. And you know, what it has afforded me to do is I have an hour blocked out every morning to do no BS work. And I've kept with it, even though the wait has been a struggle. Like, I have to say thank you because I've had to do so much work thinking like, I'm good enough to do this. I'm good at my job. You know, don't take like being laid off personally. And yeah, so that thought work has been a game changer for me preparing to do this by myself, because I don't think I would have believed that I could have done this before no BS. So thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. And then just give yourself some space. You're switching gears.
Yeah.
Being an entrepreneur, being your own boss sounds amazing until you are.
100%. Oh and my God.
The problem is you do have to report to someone. You're reporting to you.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are hard on ourselves, we work for a tyrant. Like most of us are just like, I would never work for an asshole. And then when we work for ourselves, we're just like sitting there signing up to work for the asshole.
I'm the asshole. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I always tell myself. Like sometimes, Corinne, you're being an asshole to yourself. And sometimes like it sounds like an asshole, but it actually has good information inside of it. So where's the gold in this?
Yeah.
But give yourself some time to adjust. This is for your evening eating. I want you to know, if you can't do anything at night, try not to eat and just remind yourself, I am adjusting to being someone who works 30 hours versus 60. I am adjusting to working with less pressure probably than I ever have in my life.
That's huge.
Yeah, and it's tough when you have always worked under pressure to now you're working from creativity, from belief, like everyone always thinks that sounds amazing. Like, oh, I wish I could work from creativity and belief and positivity, until the moment arrives and you realize like, well, if I just sit around believing in myself all day and talking nice to myself all day, I'd get nothing done.
I had no idea how hard. I was used to like, go to this meeting. And now I'm like, oh shit, I have to direct myself all day. And
Yeah. I get to direct myself. And sometimes I'm very hard to direct.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't listen to the boss. you are your employee and your boss. And just so develop a good relationship with yourself, but give yourself some space to know that evenings are going to be the toughest because they're not full anymore. They are supposed to be the downtime. And if you can't do anything, do like I did for a while. I would just lay in bed and tell myself, I'm doing nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Like I'm literally, I know I'm actually not doing anything wrong. this is okay to do. And here's the reasons why. It's okay to be by myself. It's okay to not be working right now. Like, that's where I think you just need the safety in the evenings. Okay.
I do.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Alrighty. Bye-bye. All right.
Bye.
Susan? All right, let's get you unmuted. Get your camera going. Bunch of Amazon. I don't know what Chris Crabtree's ordering, but he sure is going ham these days. All right, Susan.
So what I wanted to talk about was actually not necessarily related to weight loss. I have not been successful in losing weight. I've been with No BS for quite a while, and I've actually lost a lot of mental weight, but not so much physical weight.
But, do you want to?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Not everybody comes to lose weight, so I just wanted to make sure. Okay.
Well, I think I do.
Okay.
So my daughter is a college student. She has mental health issues that have led her to some pretty serious things like suicide attempts, substance abuse issues. There's just a lot going on with her. Mm-hmm. So we've been trying to manage this since she was a teenager. And now she's 22 and she's in her last year of school. We're just hoping that she can get done with school and get out in the workforce, start her life. But something occurred to me when I was listening to somebody you coached earlier who said something like she wished she had done something different. She was beating herself up. Mm-hmm. I've done all of that.
Yeah.
And now what I'm realizing is there's no destination. That as long as the rest of my life, I'm going to have to deal with with my daughter's mental health issues. Like, there's no getting out of it. So,
yeah, do you even want to get out of it?
Well, how can I say this? I want to have a daughter who's not so difficult.
Right, but that's not what I asked you. Okay. Because that's not the daughter you have.
Right.
Like, there's a difference between, I think the painful thing for parents is when they wish their children were different than who they are.
Yeah.
And when you keep thinking maybe there's a destination that we're going to hit where she's different, then you stay stuck in life.
Absolutely.
Instead of deciding, who do I want to be, knowing this is my daughter?
Mm-hmm.
She is someone who battles mental health issues. She may always battle mental health issues. Now, I will say, Susan, I don't want you to give up hope. I was probably very much like your daughter at her age, except she stayed in school where I quit and married a douchebag. My 17 through 22 years were pretty rough. If y'all all had to watch a video of it, I mean, suicide attempt, eloping, careless sex, lots of drinking, hanging out in places I should have never been in, risking my life, like very risky behavior. I'm amazed sometimes I didn't die. I mean, just from some of the things I was doing back then.
Yeah.
So I just want to say, like, what I don't want to plant in your head is that it's never going to get better. So suck it up, buttercup. I also don't want to plant in your head that it could be amazing. I just want you to see, you don't know what it's going to be.
Right.
But wishing she was different is painful for you.
Yes.
And the reason why I'm asking you, do you really want to be out of her mental health issues, is I think what you want to be out of is the current way your daughter is. But if she kept her mental health issues, do you want to let that go? Or do you want to be the mom who, you know, however you want to be?
I want to be the mom.
Right or wrong, and there's no right or wrong answer here.
I want to be the mom who shows up when she needs me. And I've been doing that for so long and always swooping in to solve the problems mm-hmm. that the problems never go away. And so I have changed my perspective in that I am listening to her and hearing her, giving her somebody to complain to.
Yeah.
And occasionally that turns into her wanting to take things out on me. A lot less than when she was a teen. Like, it's gotten better, but it still is there. And so I just feel like I've got this PTSD feeling, like when the phone rings and it's her, I just never know what's going to be on the other end of that line. Is it going to be her just saying, "Hey, mom, how you doing?" Or is it going to be her crying and saying, "You know, this happened." There's just...
Well, I think that's very valid.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you can outthink that.
Right.
I don't think that's something you can change. You are having PTSD over that. I mean, it's your baby. Your baby has been in mortal danger. It took my mom years to not be afraid that I was not going to try suicide again.
Yep.
I mean, I was married with Logan, a completely different person. I still remember, I mean, I was in my 30s, like late 30s. And I remember her telling me one time I don't remember what we were even talking about, but she said, "I think I finally believe that you'll never hurt yourself again." And it took years of me not having big problems and her seeing me in my life for her to get over that fear mm-hmm. that I wasn't going to hurt myself again.
Mm-hmm.
So the only reason I offer you that is because I want you to be compassionate that I am going to get anxious and mm-hmm. you're still in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't even have her rational brain fully formed yet. That doesn't even happen until 25 for an adult. So we still got 3 more years with her being highly irrational on top of mental health issues. Sometimes she may just actually be in a 22-year-old chick who gets angry at her mama and thinks her mama is terrible.
Yeah.
So there's always that part of it.
Mm-hmm. But
just having some compassion for you, like,
mm-hmm.
because I do want to be there for her. That means being there for all of it.
Mm-hmm.
It also means being there when I'm having PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
To be there for her means I will be triggered at times. Mm-hmm. To be there for her means being there on the good days. It also means being there on the bad days. Because
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes what we can do as mothers, and this was kind of what I had to do with Logan, was I had to give up wishing he was different. Because
mm-hmm.
it finally dawned on me. Like, it feels so real when you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like, I don't know, we get so caught up in it. But I just realized how much hurt I was causing myself. It never felt good to wish he was different.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. It felt true, but it never felt good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to break myself of wishing for it. And then I had to start going into why I wish he wasn't different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this is just who he is. And when I wish he was different, I can't love him as he is. It stops me from fully falling in love with my own child for the good and the bad.
Right. Okay. Thank you. You've given me some things to consider.
What are you thinking right now?
Well, what I'm thinking is that wishing that she was different is a thought that I can have, but it's not something that makes, whether I wish it or not, doesn't affect reality. And just, I'd feel better if I were there for her no matter what, than if I were sitting here wishing she was somebody she's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if it doesn't feel good to say, I wish I was, you know, I wish my daughter was different, because that makes it seem like I don't love her for what she is right now, which I do. So.
And then sometimes what you can do, because I think it's just our brain's natural tendency that when, like, we sometimes we wish our kids were different because we know they're suffering. So it's not like we are, I don't know. It's not like it's coming from a bad place. Mm-hmm. I believe. I think it comes from a lot of love, mm-hmm. but it's still so painful. And mm-hmm. so what you can do is when you catch yourself doing that, just say, and that's pretty normal for a mama.
Right.
The only reason I wish she was different is because I think that she could be happier.
Yeah.
I think every mother would wish that.
Yeah.
But I love her. Like reminding yourself, I love her. And sometimes I even have PTSD around it, but it's because I love her. It's because I want the best for her. Like, I think for you, creating a lot of compassion for you is where you can find some peace,
mm-hmm.
so that you're not just consumed in her problems and sitting in fear and waiting for shoes to drop.
Yeah.
Because the sense that I get from you is that there may not be a lot of that happening, where you're creating some sense of like, I am okay. Like, I am okay to wish she was different at times.
Yeah.
That's a normal human response. It's only because I love her and I wish she was happier. And mm-hmm. like giving yourself some of that space, I think could help.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're like, I just don't want you sit. I watched my mom for so many years, just literally. And my mother is like, she could write the book on worrying. If there was ever going to be a book on how to worry like a champion, it would be written by Anna Wright, because Anna Wright knows how to do it like nobody's business.
Yeah. Olympic sport.
Yes. It's, and she's a gold. She is like the Michael Phelps of it. But I just watched her spend her life waiting for the shoe to drop,
mm-hmm.
with me, with, you know, then with my son, and then just, she took care of two parents that died of cancer, and, you know, we were poor and like always waiting for a bill collector. She literally spent her life always just waiting for something terrible to happen. And
yeah,
there is no peace there.
No. And I actually think that in some ways that is keeping me from achieving some of the things that I want to do, like my weight loss goals. And I feel like perhaps a lack of hope, that I, you know, that hope is not there for everything else, because I don't have a lot of hope in an area of life that is very important to me, is my, you know, as being a mother and being able to, yeah. Hi.
Well, let's figure out, how can you lose weight while going through this? Because you don't need hope with your daughter to have hope for weight loss. They're not tied together.
Yeah. I think that you're right. They're not.
No, they're not. I mean, they're tied together in your brain a little bit.
Yeah.
But I want you to see, like, you can have hope in one area and not have hope in another. And like with your daughter, if you want to generate some hope, you can always hope, like, I hope she gets out of college.
Yeah.
I hope that she lands a job. Like, we can, like, it's almost like when we, like, You might want to try this with your daughter. Have doable hope goals.
Okay.
Rather than hoping everything's like, she's going to like thrive after college. Like your brain is trying to paint, like she's going to get out of college and suddenly her brain's going to work completely different than it has for the first 22 years of her life because mm-hmm. she got a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, she's going to go, she's going to get a job and whatever she's afraid of, she's going to just like, and here I am in a job and I'm just as afraid and I'm just as this and I'm just as that. It's just like, we take our brain everywhere we go, unfortunately. If we could pack it up, put it away, it'd be awesome, but we can't.
Yeah.
But thinking about like the first thing is like, I'm going to hold on to hope that she is graduating. This child will graduate. Because you're almost at the finish line. If there's anything you probably could hold hope in, it's that she'll cross that finish line. She's shown that she can go through a lot of shit and still go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Even if she calls crying, even if she's freaking out and she's, you know, had addiction, if she's done drugs, if she's done alcohol, if she's, you know, attempted suicide, whatever it is, somehow this child of yours is still a senior in college through all of it. So you might look for doable hope goals with her, but I will tell you the hardest part of weight loss probably for you is going to be agreeing not to eat over this child anymore.
Yeah.
And allowing yourself to be scared, allowing yourself to have PTSD sometimes, and know when you're just being extremely anxious, when your fears are warranted, when sometimes they're not, when all this is going on. You knowing all that about yourself and not eating over it is probably the only thing standing between you and losing weight at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know. You tell me. What would it take to lose a pound this week? Even though it's Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Being intentional.
What does that mean?
Planning what I'm going to eat and being intentional.
Do you do that each day now?
Pardon me?
Do you do that right now?
I'm not consistent.
Okay, can we just try 7 days, including Thanksgiving? Yeah. Just take 3 or 4 minutes in the morning, just plan your food?
Yeah.
Why would that make a difference for you?
It makes a difference because I think through my day and what I'm going to be doing and what is realistic.
Okay.
And it also stops me from the grazing and unintentional. I'm bored, so I'm going to go grab something, or, you know, I want to avoid how I'm feeling, so I go grab something. So being intentional has always been the way I have been able to achieve weight loss goals in the past. When I just leave it to chance, it's not happening.
Okay. Let's just focus this week then on, I'm going to lose a pound because I'm going to plan realistically my food every single day. And you can plan it all today. Like when I did Project U, I had them plan on Sunday. They had to turn their plans in for the entire week. Now, you don't have to do that, y'all, but for some people, they love doing it that way. That's how I eat. I plan for the whole week in one fell swoop. I just like getting it over with. Sometimes I rewrite my plans in the morning. If I have time, I love redoing it. If I don't, I always have my weekly plan as my backup. So plan your food this week. And here's what else I would plan. I want you to make you a small protocol. You can put it on a sticky note, stick it in your planner or wherever you plan for when I have a trauma response around my daughter, whether that's her calling or something happening and you freaking out. Do you eat over her when those things happen?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's make a protocol. Let's just pretend your daughter's name is Anne. Because I don't want you to have to say your daughter's name, even though I make everybody tell me their husband's names. But let's say her name's Anne, and I want you to just call it like Anne's protocol. And I want you to really think about, what do I need most when I am jacked up about Anne? So think through different scenarios that happen. Like she calls and she's blaming me. She calls and she's crying. I don't hear from her. Like whatever it is that, like, you know, gets you worked up, think of through all that.
And be all of the above.
Yes, exactly. It's like, she calls too much when she's in trouble. Oh my God, I haven't heard from her in 3 days.
Exactly.
So whatever your fears and worries are, like whatever those things are, I want you to create a little protocol for that to say, like, if all else fails and I need to eat, here's what I get to eat. Because I want to be very intentional if I'm going to eat over this. My first, like, and I would do this. I would have like, first, I'm going to calm myself down this way. Like I would have like 1, 2, and 3. Three being eat is the last option. So like, what can I do first for myself to calm myself down? Second, what could I do for myself to not eat yet and to calm myself down? Whatever that is, if all else fails, I move on to step 3. This is totally sanctioned. This is what I get to have. And I'm going to eat it after I've told myself, like, this is the best way I know how to take care of you right now. This is the best way to take care of this mama. We are going to eat, but don't do it hurriedly. Don't do it frenzied. Don't do it standing. Like, I want you, like, if you're going to calm, like, I want you to think about this. If in those moments, the biggest thing you need is safety, calm, and reassurance, eating fast and stuff, it's not going to allow you to really get that. It's just going to, like, a lot of times when we, if we don't purposely get into the rhythm of eating by, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to have this, I'm going to do it methodically, we tend to way overeat because we just get into a rhythm and it's really hard to stop it once it starts.
Right.
It's a technical term called, it's literally called frenzied eating. So it kind of gets away from ourselves. It's like our brain gets into a loop, our body gets into a loop, everything gets into a loop. So if we can start it with intentionality, it's a lot easier to just eat. And then at some point you'll feel the calmness coming over you. It's a lot easier to stop the eating too.
And maybe having some options for what that's going to be so that it can be something that's nurturing and not a bag of Dove chocolates. So like, you know, I know that there are things that might be of comfort that aren't also going to be, you know, I don't know, detrimental is maybe not a strong word, but detrimental to my weight loss.
Well, it's not, it's, well, yeah, a bag of Dove chocolates is definitely going to be detrimental to your weight loss because it's not the chocolates that's the problem. It's we eat a bag of them when we feel bad.
Right, right.
Like it, you know, poor old Dove chocolate sitting there like, two is supposed to do it, everybody. But you might want to plan something like Oh-Hyo's vanilla Greek yogurt is like my favorite thing. You might want to plan, like, I will have a yogurt with 2 Dove chocolates. And you may also, I'm going to be teaching this in the workshop, but you may want to, if you know that's your thing and they come in a bag, get you those little small Ziploc pill bags, put 2 in a bag, 2 in a bag, 2, go ahead and put all of those pre-portioned, because for all of you, anytime that you can create stopping points where your brain has to get back in check, like if you just open a bag of Dove chocolates, it's really easy to just go ham on a bag of chocolates. Yeah. But if you have to go in and get a little baggie after little baggie, each time your brain has to think.
Gives you a chance to consider it. Yeah.
Well, and as you're calming down, you have these built-in stop points to stop you.
Right? Yeah, that's a great idea. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, for, I will say, Susan, I have to give it up for you. For someone who has a very similar story as my mother, you're way more calmer than Mamie ever was. If I was coaching her, she'd be a shit show.
I've worked on this a lot.
Yeah, you definitely have a gentle spirit about you.
Thank you. I have let it ruin my health and get in the way of my life so much. And now I feel like I'm in a better place where I can handle things better.
Okay. Well, so, hang in there.
Thank you.
And good luck to your daughter. I hope that, I just, those years are just, messy and awful. And,
yeah,
you know, like, I know not everybody goes through that, but if you do have mental health issues, they're just tough years. It really felt like for me, it wasn't until about 26 or 27 where I felt like I could work with my brain. And I really do think that's because that's about the time the rational brain fully forms in a human.
Right. Right.
So,
well, thank you so much.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, everyone. That is it for today. Stephanie, I'm training for a marathon. My brain is doing all the thoughts about food. In the past, I haven't lost weight while training for races, so therefore I won't lose weight now. Very often when people do train for these races, people don't lose weight, but here's what we need to remember when we're training for long races. Number one, your body's always going to, it's always going to prioritize recovery before fat burn. And you want that because what you don't want is your body eating away at your muscle. So you want it to prioritize the right way. The second thing is very often when we go into it thinking, I won't lose weight because I'm training for this, then we do some fuck it eating. And it doesn't always look like a binge. It doesn't always look like just face down and all this other stuff. But when, like, I would do a long run for a marathon, say I had an 18 miler, you burn about 2000 calories. You go, you have a burger, fries, and a beer. I didn't drink beer, I drank wine. And you've blown through 2000 calories. So a lot of times what happens when it comes to gaining weight while doing race training is it is the long run meals. If you go to the Cheesecake Factory and get a few things, you're probably at 3,000 to 4,000 calories. So our wiggle room for how much junk we can have, like, this is the biggest thing that runners typically, the problem they run into when it comes to losing weight when they're training, is your body needs more nutrition, but we give it like, well, I ran so I can have this. We give it non-nutritious foods. And this is not for all, this is, if you're going to train for races, you need to eat like an athlete. Athletes don't eat junk while they are playing sports. They do that in the off season. But this is the thing. Yes, you can. I teach you in No BS that you can eat the food you love and lose weight. But when you are going to be doing something like a marathon, you are not a typical No BS woman anymore. You have now said, my body, I've got to decide how much do I want to take care of it. I am putting extreme demands on it, and extreme demands call for some bigger extreme thinking, not extreme in a bad way, but you've got to meet that demand, which means I need to be bucking the fuck up and probably not reward eating all the time. My hunger is going to scale, but that doesn't mean I get chocolate. My hunger is going to scale, and I'm going to need to give it more nutrition, the nutritious things it needs. So it's still about intentionality. I rationally know a long run, I may need to eat more. Example, I did 12 miles. Then my brain goes into restriction thoughts that if I don't eat, I will be burning so many calories, which will lead to weight loss. If you don't eat, you do need to eat, but you need to make sure that you are eating balanced. So here's my advice. I rarely ever say this. I don't think it's a bad idea that when you are running, that you may actually want to not only track your food, but you may sometimes want to track calories just to make sure that you are not under eating and then end up triggering binge responses later on junk. Do more. Like if you're marathon training, I was eating like 6 times a day, small meals though, little hits of food throughout the day. I never got big meals, and I never really got to eat until I was full or till I really felt like I had enough, because I only eat 3 now because I don't do this stuff anymore. So I can eat till enough, just above enough, and maintain my weight. But if you are, you know, doing a half marathon or a marathon, you can't afford to not eat, because you are going to set yourself up to, number one, lose muscle and bone, which you do not want to lose, because no one's going to notice that. Then when you're done with the training, your body's going to be able, not be able to burn as many calories. And plus you're going to be taking the run load down. So you're probably going to gain weight immediately afterward, because your body's going to think, oh, okay, now we need to store up. And you're not going to have the muscle and you're not going to have the bones to be able to compensate for what you just, what you've done. So I would probably track some. Don't get crazy about it, but track some. If you ran 12 miles, that's about 1200 calories burned. So you need to think about, all right, I need to eat my normal load for the day, which for the average woman, just if you're laying on your ass doing nothing, your body is going to need 1400 to 1600 calories a day to lay on your butt all day long and do nothing. That is just to breathe, pump blood, do the things. So now you've got 1200 on top. So let's say 14 and 12 is 2600. On those days, you're going to have your nutrition that you're going to have to do for your training. So you're probably going to consume at least 300 calories while you're running. So now we're only looking at 2300 calories for the day. And that's probably about what you'll need to eat. If, when I was doing a lot of my marathoning and stuff, and I am no expert on this, but I will just tell you, when I was doing, so I did marathons where there was like a 5K, a 10K, a half marathon, and a marathon all in 4 days. I did a lot of extreme racing on long training days. That's not the day you diet. That's not a weight loss day, but it's also not a fuck it eat day. It is a very nutritionally intensive day. It is all about recovery. It is all about giving your body what it needs to perform, and what it needs to operate. And I promise you, you can lose weight throughout if you do that. Without it, it's almost impossible, because we're eating shit. Our body doesn't need shit. It needs good stuff to be able to recover and do its thing. And also it leads to injury if you eat like shit too. All right. I hope that helps. That's my down and dirty on, it's about the extent of my sports nutrition, but I did it for a long time. And I'm just going to tell you, I'll never go back. Corinne's extreme running days are over. Sometimes like I want to go back and I want to slap my past self in my 30s who did all those things and didn't believe in mobility work, rolling, and stretching. Because I feel it now, bitches. All right. Y'all have a good one. Bye, y'all.